Milo's Pro Rewards members. Save big during Lowe's Pro Savings Days. Get your member volume discount, plus an extra 5% off eligible orders with a quote of $2,000 or more. And buy more and save more with up to 20% off in-stock molding when you spend $250 or more. Members get more at Lowe's. Valid through 7/31. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Can't be combined with any contract or special pricing. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit the Pro Desk or Lowe's.com/terms for more details. Subject to change.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play. Only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is continuing live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Presence of the jury on them. Okay. Have you had a conversation with a nurse, Bonnie Rice, from Tampa General Hospital?
Back in the time of this case, yes.
When was that conversation, to the best of your recollection? A month and a year is fine. For the purpose of this question.
I would say October into November. Late October, early November, 2016.
Was there any conversations, to the best of your recollection, between you and Bonnie Rice in calendar year 2015 about Maya Kowalski?
No.
Okay. I'm going to ask you those two questions first, and then I'm going to ask you the rest of the jury questions.
Okay.
Let's bring in the jury.
Yes, sir.
Okay, please be seated, members of the jury. I want to confirm while you're away, you did not discuss this case amongst yourselves, you did no investigation and received no information. Is that all correct?
Correct.
That you haven't seen any media reports of this case, is that correct?
Correct.
No one approached you, is that correct?
Correct.
Outside of Dr. Smith's presence, I went through the jury's questions. I'm going to be able to ask a good number of them, but not all of them. Dr. Smith, have you had a conversation with a nurse, Bonnie Rice, from Tampa General Hospital in connection with Maya Kowalski?
She's a nurse practitioner, but yes.
When approximately was that conversation?
I'm pretty sure it was in late October, early November of 2016.
Have you had any conversations with nurse practitioner Rice in calendar year 2015? With respect to Maya Kowalski?
No.
Next question. Do you know why it is the hospital's policy to contact you first instead of reporting the suspected abuse to the child abuse hotline?
It's an unusual situation, and because of the way that the whole system is set up in Florida and they have to file a report for me to do a medical evaluation, sometimes they're not sure what to do, and so in those occasional situations, I'm going to say once or twice a year, a doctor from All Children's would call me to ask me a question about the case that they were involved in and request my expertise related to the child abuse and neglect question that they had.
Correct me if I am wrong, there is no harm in contacting the hotline prior to contacting an expert first.
I'm sorry, can you?
Sure. Correct me if I am wrong. There is no harm in contacting the hotline prior to contacting an expert first.
The only situation would be if there potentially wasn't really enough evidence or whatever to justify a report. So otherwise, no, I mean, typically the report gets made before I, as an expert, would be involved, almost all the time.
How would CPT normally access the medical records?
So I always would access them through my remote access that's granted as a member of the active medical staff. If it was a child protection team, say from Sarasota County, that the person didn't have privileges at All Children's, then what they would have to do would be to, you know, submit a request for the records to the hospital to obtain those records.
Does the county child protection team have access to medical records normally without privileges?
Only because, well, not like I do with it's an electronic access. Another team or somebody besides me would have to make that request. And there's statutory language that requires the hospital to provide those records in the furtherance of the investigation. So they can get them, but they can't just log in and see them as easily as I can.
Are the physicians that are part of the child protection team required to have privileges at a hospital to provide a medical assessment?
I'm pretty sure that is correct. So mine's easy because they're just the one hospital. Other teams, like say for example in Miami, I think the medical director probably has to have privileges at Jackson Memorial and Miami Children's in order to go in and see the child, but I'm honestly not sure because it's not my situation. So I don't know exactly what the rule is with that. I think probably they have to have privileges, but I'm not sure.
So if yes, do the privileges grant access to the patient's medical records?
Yes. So as part of our credentialing, we get recredentialed every 2 years. We have to do like certain, you know, HIPAA training about medical records. There are rules about which ones you can and can't access. And it's pretty closely watched and monitored. And so, you know, I can do that in my role as the medical director of the child protection team, and on these occasional situations where they call me separately because they're not sure what to do and need child abuse pediatrician expertise, I can do it in that role as a member of the medical staff.
Is it standard for a child protection team physician to offer recommendation to a child's treating physician in a suspected child abuse case?
With regards to potentially certain tests or certain needs of the court, yes. So for example, if I'm seeing a child that has a bunch of injuries and they need a follow-up brain scan, I can make that recommendation to the team, could you please do a brain scan on such and such date? And typically they're going to do what I ask them to do in terms of that because it's something I need for the purposes of the investigation and to assist all the various people involved to make a good decision in the case. So I think that answers probably.
Who made the referral to your child protection team for the evaluation?
the child protective investigator called our person, called a case coordinator that was on call or was the designated person to receive what they call intakes. So when there's an investigation that's been initiated, particularly in a case like this where there's a major medical component, then the child protective investigator calls the child protection team, and one of these case coordinators, or we actually had a person that they called an intake coordinator, takes the information, kind of reviews everything, and then that person would contact me and say, Dr. Smith, we need you to go down and see such and such child at the hospital.
When you told Dr. Dees to get Maya off as many meds as possible, did you know that was already in progress prior to telling Dr. Dees to do so?
I did not.
Do you still have medical privileges at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital?
Yes, I still have active medical staff privileges there.
Members of the jury, that is all the questions that I'm going to be able to ask. So, Mr. Hunter, you now have the floor, sir.
Could I have trial exhibit 2408-1739 in evidence? What is that?
What's the second number?
Can you take that down, please? For your edification, Doctor, this is an email from Beata Kowalski dated 12 October 2016. And I'm going to ask that you go to page 1739, the following page, and then the midway through the second full paragraph on that page, there's a indications Tuesday 10-11 evening I had another supersized visit from MD Dr. Smith, who was sent by CPS to investigate this case. Would that have been about the time that you spoke with Mrs. Kowalski, the author of this email?
Yes, that's exactly what, and she says an hour and a half, so just like I said earlier, that was that evening that I came down and talked with her.
Okay. There was reference to the EEG video that was taken of this patient.
Yes.
Have you ever reviewed it?
I don't believe so. It's possible at the time I looked at a few minutes of it, but I don't think so.
Were you aware of any indication on that video of Maya Kowalski defecating or urinating upon herself?
I had no idea if that was true or not, frankly.
Did you ever hear any indication of that and suggestion of that in real time?
No.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes, counsel.
So no questions?
Yeah.
And Mr. Hunter, do you have any questions?
No, sir, Your Honor.
Do the jury have any further questions? Seeing none. Okay, members of the jury, I'm going to ask that you be back at 1:45, so just a couple extra minutes beyond our normal lunchtime. Do not discuss this case amongst yourselves. Do not do any investigation and receive no information. See you at 1:45.
All rise. Let's exit.
Jury's out of our presence. Dr. Smith, there's a couple things we needed to do before we were able to break for lunch. So, Mr. Hunter, you have the floor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm trying to scrounge up some clean copies of the reports here.
We're doing a proffer, just so you understand.
Okay.
Oh, Madam Court Reporter, if you could mark this transcript as the proffer.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Dr. Smith, this is a proffer for a potential appellate record, and what I'm going to do is ask you some kind of conclusory questions and some summary questions to avoid your having to sit here for a long afternoon and all of us the same way.
Okay.
In the process of your investigation of the Maya Kowalski case after it was referred to you, did you conduct an investigation? Did you gather some medical records?
I did a medical evaluation, including gathering a lot of medical records, yes.
Okay. And did you, in fact, promulgate two different reports?
Yes.
Regarding that? One was a preliminary report in October of 2016?
October 13th, correct.
Okay. And the other was one signed December 2nd, 2016?
Correct.
Do those reports both indicate the results of your investigation and review to that date?
Yes.
Okay. And in connection with your report in your investigation, did you obtain certain medical records regarding Maya Kowalski?
Yes.
And does your report, does the report you signed December 2nd, 2016, fairly and accurately reflect the records that you gathered and then reviewed for your report?
Up until that time, yes.
Okay. And then were there subsequent records you reviewed after that, that you received after that date?
Yes.
Okay. And does your report first of October, I think you said 13th, 2016?
Correct. Yes.
Does it fairly and accurately reflect your conclusions up to that date?
Yes.
Okay. And that would, if we were to walk through that report and what it was based upon, your indication be that it contained and fairly reflected the outcome and your conclusions of your investigation up to October 13th, 2016?
Yes.
And would it also reflect what you advise up to the conclusions and facts of which you advised the court, the dependency court, as of that date?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm going to show you what we're going to mark as whatever the court clerk tells me we're going to mark it as.
What's the next in the series for the defendants?
3328.
For ID. For ID. It's not coming into evidence.
Correct. This is 3328 for identification. And let me just ask you, is that a true and correct copy of your report of October 13th, 2016?
Yes.
Okay. Can you hand that to me? Are you finished with it, Mr.
Yes,
Hunter? Madam Clerk, it's two-sided, so just be careful.
And then after that, after you rendered that report of 13th, 2016, after you rendered that report, did you continue an investigation as reflected in the report that you signed on December 2nd, 2016?
I continued my medical evaluation up to that point in December and gathered lots of additional records beyond what I had on October 13th, yes.
Okay. And I have a badly marked up copy of what I'm going to ask be marked for identification as defense exhibit.
Well, is there already a specific exhibit number on that? Down at the bottom, Mr. Hunter, the first page, look at the first page.
December or the October?
December.
The December is 3045, 1 through 46.
The answer to your question, my copy doesn't, but I trust Mr.
Mr. Hughes, will you say that and let the clerk know what defense numbers are the two reports that have been previously marked?
So the first report is an October 13, 2016 preliminary report, and it is defense exhibit number 3044.
The for ID, it's not in, it's just ID.
Just that for identification purposes. For identification purposes, Sally Smith's December 5th, 2016 report is defense exhibits number 3045, and that's pages 1 through 46, and it's currently being printed.
Or can't we just put the first
page up, if you want? That's fine. Okay. I apologize for that.
No. No worries. Thank you, Mr. Hughes.
And to the clerk for attempting to gum up the works one more time. Does your December 2nd, 2016 report, Defense Exhibit 3045, does it also reflect your opinions and conclusions as of that date regarding your investigation?
Regarding my medical evaluation, yes.
Okay. And just if you would briefly tell the court what your opinions were regarding this matter as reflected in that report.
As reflected in that report, it was my conclusion that there was what we call positive findings for medical child abuse, and that the medical record review and the history taking and that kind of thing that I had reviewed provided very strong evidence to support that conclusion.
Okay. Was there any conclusion, and is that the conclusion of medical child abuse would colloquially be known as Munchausen by proxy?
Yes, and I believe it's even in the what we call the impression. That was my conclusion in the report. I put in parentheses Munchausen syndrome by proxy because that's kind of a well-known term for this situation.
Okay. And did you reach any conclusion regarding conversion disorder?
Yes.
And what was that?
It was my opinion based on all of the observations of the various medical staff and team and staff members, et cetera, as well as based on multiple other physicians' reports that I had reviewed that she had a conversion disorder. It's actually called a functional neurological disorder now, but at that time it was called a conversion disorder.
When you say she, you refer to Maya Kowalski?
Maya Kowalski, yes.
Okay. In reaching the conclusions and opinions you just expressed to us, how many pages of medical records did you review?
I don't know exactly as I sit here, but well over 2,000.
Okay. And I see you brought with you today a stack of 3, 4, and 5-inch binders that is on the table in front of you. Are those at least some of the records you reviewed?
Those are all of the medical records that I printed. So there are some that I reviewed in the electronic medical record from Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital that I don't have copies of. But everything that I had a copy of in terms of all her medical records going back to actually her, you know, first visit to the pediatrician up in Chicago is in those binders.
Okay. And did the material you reviewed also include certain online WordPress blogs that had been created by Beata Kowalski?
Yes.
I believe that's all I have, Your Honor.
Mr. Anderson, do you have anything in proffer?
Dr. Smith, before, or let's say, right at the start of this, in the first part of October, you had a call with Dr. Kirkpatrick, did you not?
I did.
And Dr. Kirkpatrick explained to you that he had been treating Maya Kowalski for CRPS, correct?
He did.
And he told you that statistically speaking, CRPS is often mistaken for conversion or Munchausen by proxy, did he not?
I don't really remember exactly what his words were. I took a few notes from the conversation that I had with him, and I know that there was some general discussion along those lines.
And yet you did not put anything in your report about Dr. Kirkpatrick, did you?
Yes, I believe there's a whole section about his medical records.
Yeah, except for the fact that you did not tell anyone in that report that he had warned you off of going after the Kowalskis.
It's completely irrelevant for a child protection team medical evaluation because that's the whole point of the evaluation and gathering all the records. The problem in these cases is that the treating physicians have not done that. And so the fact that he, who sent her to Mexico for the ketamine coma, told me not to investigate child abuse, it was completely irrelevant to me because my job was to investigate child abuse. So if I had come away from my job saying, I was supposed to do this, but this doctor told me not to, so I'm not doing it, and there's no evidence of anything here, I would not have been doing my job even remotely near a standard of care.
Do you not understand the importance of putting both sides of the story in your report?
The both sides of the story is the responsibility of the various people who are going to present it to the court. My job as the medical director for the child protection team is to do what I need to do to assist the investigators and the detectives and the attorneys that are involved in the case as to whether there is evidence to support a diagnosis of whatever type of child abuse is being assessed. So it's not my responsibility to lay out some whole long argument about what it might be otherwise if I have extensive evidence to support that it's a type of child abuse.
Dr. Smith, you know there wasn't a single child psychologist or child psychiatrist that diagnosed what you were claiming. You're aware of that, right?
That's also irrelevant.
So you are the ultimate decider of medical issues which you have minimal or no training in.
I have extensive training.
Yes, but you're not.
That's a proper. You can answer, Dr. Smith.
I have extensive training in evaluating child abuse and neglect. Medical child abuse is a child abuse pediatric diagnosis. There is a parallel track in psychiatry where there's a thing called factitious disorder imposed on another, which is assessing the perpetrator or the caretaker in that scenario. But I don't need a psychiatric degree to assess medical child abuse. I'm very well trained to evaluate medical child abuse based on my child abuse pediatrics experience and board certification.
Well, there's not a single child psychologist or psychiatrist that agreed with you. You do realize that, don't you?
No, I don't.
Well, name a child psychologist or psychiatrist that examined Maya Kowalski who agreed with you.
Well, that wasn't their job to write in the report whether there's medical child abuse, so that specific thing documented by, for example, Dr. Cabot or Dr. Katzenstein, I don't know, honestly. I'd have to look back to see if they ever documented that as one of their diagnoses, but that's not their job. My job is to assess that, and if I present adequate evidence to the court can act on that. The court has every ability to pull all these people in, including Dr. Kirkpatrick, including Dr. Hanna. I think they testified in the dependency action. And if the judge decides that there's serious question about whether I'm right, then, you know, the court makes that decision based on the evidence that they receive. That's not my job to litigate the whole thing and put out all of the potential possibilities in the case and say, I'm the child abuse pediatrician, but I don't really know if there was child abuse here, because in this case, there clearly, in my opinion, was child abuse here.
Yeah. So you did not put in any of the conclusions or any of the data from Eagle's Wings and those therapists and psychologists that saw the Kowalskis, did you?
There was a licensed clinical social work intern who saw Maya and her family at Eagle's Wings, and I don't honestly know where that was in the pile of records when I was writing up my report. I kept writing part of the report, having to do other things, writing part of the report, having to do other things, and I inadvertently did not include that in my report.
Well, you did research it enough to realize that Rebecca Johnson had a master's degree and over 20 years of experience as a therapist at Eagle's Wings. Did you not?
Well, the question really in terms of my part
I'm
is whether...
I'm just asking you if you knew that or not, ma'am.
I knew she... I'd have to look and see exactly what her credentials were. I'd certainly, defer to you if you're reading her credentials off. But it's irrelevant unless she did the whole thing I did, looking at all these medical records and has expertise in medical child abuse, for her to be able to say one way or the other if there was child abuse or not.
Okay. Look, did anybody agree with your assessment that there was no CRPS?
Yes, I believe they did.
Who?
I believe that there were multiple people on the hospitalist team that didn't think she had it, and I believe that although there was probably some question about whether she might have some sort of amplified pain disorder, the pain management team didn't think she had CRPS.
Well, amazingly enough, we did have Dr. Elliott in here to testify, and he never said that she did not have it. None of the doctors so far testified, A, that they were experts in CRPS, or B, that she did not have it. Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not. I wasn't supposed to watch any of the testimonies.
True.
I have no idea what people talk about.
Gathering that. From your investigation, though, at the time, did it come to your attention? Nowhere in any of the records did anyone who had any expertise in this, that is a pain management doctor, a neurologist, or a anesthesiologist, ever agree with your assessment that there was no CRPS?
I think I just answered that. Yes, I believe there were people that had the same opinion.
Okay. What did you check with Dr. Spiegel, a board-certified neurologist that treated Maya and confirmed CRPS?
Objection. Assumes facts, not evidence.
Go ahead and answer.
Dr. Spiegel had this 10-year-old child do hyperbaric oxygen treatment, I believe, on 40 occasions in a row when she also got ketamine on some of the same days. So I wasn't terribly worried about whether he thought or did not think that she had CRPS.
Because you'd already decided in your mind that a board-certified pediatrician with his years of experience was not qualified to render an opinion on that. Is that right?
Objection misrepresents the credentials, and I asked for comment on another Krembill no rules.
Go ahead and answer.
I'm sorry.
Dr. Barr.
Yeah.
A board-certified neurologist. He testified and confirmed CRPS. Did you put that in your report?
I don't know that I specifically said that he said that diagnosis. I think, as I recall, without going into the stack, that I did say in the history that Dr. Kirkpatrick had diagnosed her with that. Those people might have had that opinion. I don't think, based on my review of the CRPS literature and discussions with physicians since then, and in the context of all the evidence that there was of medical child abuse, that Dr. Barr's opinion, if that was his, that she had CRPS, was reliable.
Okay, so now Dr. Spiegel is not reliable, and he's a neurologist. At least will you agree that neurology and anesthesiology are the two areas that are most involved in the investigation of complex regional pain syndrome?
I imagine those are people that typically evaluate and treat patients with complex regional pain syndrome, sure. But not all neurologists pain management or not all neurologists or anesthesiologists are, if you will, created equally. There are some who practice at a very high level, and when I, having reviewed medical records from all kinds of providers all over the state and even other parts of the country for 35 years, read through information and see all the supporting information that they have and compare that with other information that I gather in my medical record review, I can assess whether the person that, you know, made thousands of dollars was reliable or not. And I didn't find those people to be particularly reliable in terms of their diagnosis, even though I certainly included their information in my report.
Dr. Hanna, a anesthesiologist with over 25 years of experience in treating CRPS. You didn't put his confirmation, he did a diagnosis of CRPS in your report either, did you?
I believe in the history. I made reference to that. I'm pretty sure I did say that he, made that diagnosis. But this is a doctor who was giving a child, a 10-year-old child who was on the small side, 1,000 milligrams of ketamine, anywhere between 8 and 32 milligrams of Versed, doses of Zofran, doses 1,750 milligrams typically of magnesium, all at the same time in an outpatient setting with no documentation of vital signs. And there was indication in the records that appeared to me to suggest that the family member was the person monitoring the pulse oximeter. So that person, to me, is not particularly reliable in terms of whether this child needed the treatment that she was getting, whether he made an accurate diagnosis or not. So I put his information in my report. Yes, I discounted his diagnosis.
And, of course, you discounted Dr. Cantu's confirmation of CRPS.
Well, I never got any records from Dr. Cantu, so I couldn't really address that whole situation other than from the WordPress blog. This person put a 9-year-old child in a ketamine coma for days. It took her probably about a week to just be able to be discharged from the hospital after that.
So
I didn't find him reliable from what I saw.
All right, so if I'm understanding you, the fact that three different treating anesthesiologists specializing in CRPS, two different neurologists specializing in the treating of CRPS, you know more. Fair?
I don't know more. As I said, I looked at their information, and based on what was done with this particular child, I did not find their opinion to be reliable.
And who elected you to be the judge of whether all of these board-certified physicians were reliable?
Nobody. I presented it to a real judge who made a determination.
Well, isn't it true, ma'am, that you are not a medical investigator? You are, in fact, a medical prosecutor.
That's absolute nonsense.
Because an investigator would include both sides of the story and let the judge decide, right?
No. The Child Protection Team medical director will assess whether there's medical evidence to support a diagnosis of child abuse, and then the dependency attorney will present that to the judge. And the other side gets attorneys also. There were five in this case. And they present all the information, and then the judge tries to decide, you know, what whose information is more reliable.
Here, under oath, are you telling us, are you an investigator or are you a prosecutor?
I am neither.
Of the information.
I'm a medical doctor who is an expert in child abuse pediatrics.
Mr. Anderson, I'm giving you very wide latitude.
I'm done.
You're finished?
Yep.
Okay. Mr. Hunter, anything further in proffer?
Very briefly, Robert. When you spoke with Dr. Kirkpatrick and he warned you off, did he tell you that he had last seen this child 10 months before the conversation?
I honestly don't recall if I already knew that. I might have already known that.
And when you wrote your report, you had the Tampa General Hospital records, the Lurie Children's Hospital records, the All Children's records predating October of 2016, correct?
Correct.
And all those hospitalizations with all those specialists that saw this child, did you see any of them suggest that CRPS was the diagnosis?
No, and multiple were experts in complex regional pain syndrome.
Thank you.
Is the proffer complete?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, Madam Court Reporter, note that the proffer is now closed. Dr. Sally Smith, you had looked at a little report during your testimony. Can you hand that to
yes.
me?
Yes.
I'm going to hand it to the clerk.
You can keep it if you want.
Okay. I'm going to hand it to the clerk. Let's mark it as whatever the next number for plaintiff for ID purposes. And just tell us what that number is. So the report that Dr. Smith looked at during her testimony in front of the jury is ID'd as 2804. It's not in evidence.
I'm sorry. I think you said in front of the jury. I think you meant not.
No. Earlier during her testimony, she had pulled out a report, and that is what we just identified. Now, does Dr. Sally Smith, is she released or does she need to remain under subpoena?
She's released by plaintiff.
Released, Your Honor. You can watch her.
If you are released, you are no longer subject to the rule of sequestration.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's be back here, everybody, at 1:30. I will try to review Mr. Anderson's edits to the jury instruction. If you could let Mr. Altenburn and Mr. Elegant know that I'm going to try to address it at 1:30.
I suspect you just told me.
Well,
Mr. Altenburn.
I'm just letting you know what my plan is.
Thank you.
See you at 1:30. Mr. Elegant. There's Mr. Altenburn. Let's talk about the dependency court order instruction. I've now had a chance to review Mr. Anderson's proposed edits. I didn't know if Mr. Elegant or Mr. Anderson wanted to say anything on them.
Your Honor, briefly, I would defer to Mr. Anderson on the details. It was a continued attempt to make these a little less mind-numbing, simplify them down to something more important, make sure they had a little more balance.
Your Honor, what I did was go back, review the prior order the court had drafted, and then compare the orders themselves, and then reviewed as much of the notes as I possibly could on what transpired then as testified to now. And the goal was to try to reduce down to the bare essence those portions of the orders that were pertinent to what the jury is being asked to do here. The idea being that the simpler the orders are, this order is, And the simpler the, quote, rules are, the less questions we're going to get. This is a very intelligent jury that asks a ton of questions. My concern was that if we give them too much or virtually anything that isn't explained and suited to what they're doing, we're just going to have a lot, we're going to spend a lot of time answering questions when we really need to be concluding the case. So the idea here, going through the October 14th order, and this is not perfect by any means. Obviously, you'll see there's a typo and a word or two left out here. But the goal was, at the beginning and the end, to put in a caveat that from the court has, without going into great detail, but that the court has determined the following causes of action are not subject to the immunity. And I think that probably the top of the page, on page two there, needs to be a little stronger than what I've got. And then you'll note at the very end, page 8 of 8, I've got that the same warning. So I wanted to begin and end with the warning, the first one being pretty basic, and the second one being more in line with what I thought counsel, what had been agreed to with everyone. And then we go through the October 14th order as to the people involved, the November 10th order as to the people involved. There in the November 10th order, if you look at page 5 of 8 under other relevant requirements in the bottom, it says that the November 10 order allowed Maya Kowalski to have religious artifacts. A sentence that I did not put in there, but I think should be put in there, are words to the effect, but there was no prohibition on her having religious artifacts before this order. The reason being that by simply stating there's an order, you know, in the perception now allowing religious artifacts, the jury might get the idea that prior to this, they were prohibited somehow. And so there had to be a court order for her to have them. And that wasn't the situation. She was allowed to have them under their patient's rights. And the order was really clarifying some problems that had arisen. Then on page 6 of 8, I thought I had deleted this. Apparently I didn't. The December 9, 2016 order, as I read it, really does not affect anything that we're talking about here, because it has to do with a birthday and who gets to go to the birthday. And again, things like that, that while technically if we're going to be complete with all the orders, it goes in it, still, I believe that the less things like that are in this, and the more we focus the jurors onto the specifics of the orders that, for lack of a better term, count, the more efficient this will be. On the December 16th order, I have been wondering about the statement about the dependency court allowing Johns Hopkins to supervise the video calls, his medical staff could suspend those calls, only insofar as, again, I don't know, in my review of the original order, it did not have the language attendant to that sentence and that portion of the order. But clearly, based on the other orders, Johns Hopkins was always subject to its own internal rules and regulations. And my concern here is that the jury has heard a lot about the patient's rights, statement of rights, incorporated into the same packet that has the release the defense wants to argue in favor of. And it clearly was part of the agreement between the parties and part of their website and part of this case. And so I wanted to be able to include in this something to the effect of, according to its rules and regulations, so on and so forth. So that change would go right before this was a change from the November 10 order. I have not put it in yet, but I think it would be appropriate to do that. Although, again, it wasn't specific to this part of the order, but it's specific to virtually every other part of the orders. Every other order, when they defer to Johns Hopkins, it again ties it back into, and by the way, you have to follow your own rules and rights that you've given. And then we go through to the December 27th order on page 7, and we go through the specifics of that. Again, I tried to track in readable, because some of the orders, I think everyone will agree, are difficult to navigate for us, and because there are inherent inconsistencies. And for the jury to do that by just putting the data out there, which may be, from appellate purposes, the cleanest, still, I think it is overall better, and the appellate court would understand the problems with just reciting the terms of the orders because of the inconsistencies involved and the fact that the jury's going to come back and say, well, this order says this on this time, but then on this time the order says this, and what about inside the order itself? The order says you can do it this way, but then down here it says you can't do it this way. And there are plenty of those in the orders as drafted in the shelter action. So then on the last page, you'll see, again, the caveat, which I put at the end after the dependency order, January 13th, discharges Maya. And that is, so it speaks for itself that none of the above orders provide them with immunity or other protection. It should be from plaintiff's claims for specific events and then false imprisonment, so on. The only other question I have in conclusion is the issue about the ketamine order. The defense has made much in the case, well, I believe will and has to a certain extent, talked about whether or not the Maya not using ketamine after she left was some indication or admission that the plaintiffs...
I see that as a different total issue than talking about this visitation. Yes. That's not,
then I'll shut up about that.
Let's not mix those concepts.
Got it. Well, then, I'm done. That's my explanation for the order. Obviously, open to whatever suggestions and comments.
Your Honor, the truth is Mr. Anderson just never wanted those orders in front of the jury from the first day of this trial. You've been trying to get them in front of the jury now for 2.5 weeks or longer. I spent more than a day trying to put together something that I thought would be as concise as I could that quoted those orders. I don't know how much time you spent, but from my read of this, you rather carefully took those orders that I had provided to you and put them into simple English and was accurate about what is in them. And, you know, all this was done, my order was submitted to you, I don't know, sometime middle of the latter part of last week. And now when we're ready to read it this morning, he wants to make a wholesale change to the whole thing. Mostly he wants to take out the sections he doesn't like and leave in the sections he does like. And so my front end on this is that I do believe that your provisions of this were an accurate transition from the orders I gave you to something that will hopefully make the jury understand it better and faster than what I had provided to you. So I don't think it needs all of these changes. I did note, by the way, that the last time we talked about these orders, we talked about because the October 14th order was effective October 13th. I'm pretty sure the last time around we called it the October 13th order. Maybe we should stay consistent on that. But the rest of this, I mean, unless you have questions about it, I think that you did a good job, and I'm content with you staying with what you wrote.
I am not going to change horses at this point in time. I believe that the proposed changes that Mr. Anderson would make this not a neutral and balanced recitation of the orders. So I'm going to stick with what I said with, you know, my
with your changes.
Change this morning, and obviously not including that one sentence that I continue to struggle with. And again, we can continue before this actually gets put into the final package that goes to the jury after all the evidence is in. We can, you know, massage the language a little bit more, but I'm not going to. Now, I will say if the parties want me to take out the birthday order and go from five orders to four orders. I don't think that changes anything, so I'm happy to take it out if you want to leave it in.
For clarification, actually from tribal lawyers as well, has there been any reference that we disobeyed in any fashion?
No, that's my point. Okay. I mean, there's no allegation that
It may need to be added in later, depending on what they do when Kathy B's on the stand, but for this juncture, I think it could come
out. It's a half of a page, so it doesn't materially change anything. So if there's the possibility that it's going to be necessary, I don't want to tell them there's four orders, and the next time tell them there's five.
So, Your Honor, could we, again, could consider adding the paragraph at the end, which is kind of balances out. There's a short statement in the beginning that doesn't affect the claims, but having that statement at the end after they've heard all this, we think would be important to put it in the right perspective.
I have already said it. I'm not going to say it again in the instruction.
Where was it in that instruction? Was it at the beginning, Judge, your order? I don't have it up here with me.
Judge, can we say the 10-14 order was effective 10-13? I mean, I know it stated 10-14, but it was effective 10-13.
Yeah, I think it was on pro time to the 13th, much to my chagrin. But.
So what I'll do, which was effective, was that 2:30 a.m.?
Yes, either 2 or 2:30.
I've got it. I've got the order. I'll look.
Well, let's do it right this second.
It's effective 2:30 a.m. October 13th, 2016. First page on placement and shelter.
So it wouldn't really, though, affect anything going on during that day.
I don't think there were visitation issues during that day. I don't honestly remember when Mrs. Kowalski was removed from the premises. But we've already explained it to the jury as the 13th. I just think it's important to keep it consistent.
All right.
Just so you can see what I've just done. Anything else on adding that clause? Mr. Anderson?
No, Judge.
Now, the question is, when am I going to read this?
I prefer to have it read now when they first come in, rather than at the end of the day when they're tired, or more tired.
So right when the jury comes in?
Yes, sir.
And I must state that I do not agree with making this, and I've been consistent with orders during the course of the trial throughout, that the plaintiffs object to reading one or two of the instructions that are going to go at the end of the case in the middle of the case, because it unduly emphasizes some orders, instructions over other orders, and by doing so minimizes the other orders. So we again urge the court to not read this during the middle of the trial, because then it will be read twice and the jury will have heard this order, and I believe we had one order or earlier, two times, rather than and all the remainder ones once at the end. And it does give the impression that these instructions, jury instructions, I shouldn't say orders, control or are more powerful or somehow should be attended to closer than the instructions on all the remainder. So that's our objection to it.
Anything you want to add, Mr. Altman?
Well, in context, when Ms. Beatty testifies about these things, knowing these things, which are more or less legal facts to some degree, is very important. You had talked about giving this to them in the end in writing. I wasn't
100% clear to me whether you plan to read it again at the end as well as give it to them in writing.
I plan on it being in the actual physical packet.
Packet.
That goes back with them.
I mean, unless there are significant changes to it, I don't know that I would be demanding that you read it twice so long it was in the packet. They went back and they understood that what they heard once before was in the packet for them to double check during deliberations.
So you're suggesting that we not read?
No.
Judge, she wants to read.
The jury has had so many questions about these orders.
Yeah.
Questions on a lot of different...
I mean, I want it read right now.
Yes, it needs to be read again later.
And she wants it read twice, so that's fine.
I agree. The jury has been really on this particular issue, so I'm going to read it. And I will read it when the jury comes in. Now, here's the next question. I'm not going to physically give them paper right now. I do have the ability to place it up on the screen as I read it.
That's up to Your Honor, either way.
I don't think that you they would be paying attention to the screen and not
they
you. I would suggest
would
the courts have you read it.
Well, I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
No, it would be helpful for them to follow
put it
along.
Up at this point.
Adults are visual learners. They learn better when they can hear and see something than if they just hear it. So if you've got the ability to do that, I would like to have you do that.
It's going to take them forever to read through all this while the court is also reading.
I'm going to read it at my normal speed, and I will... the only thing is it makes it a little difficult because I'll be looking this way and I have to control it over here. But I think I can do it without any sort of delay. So,
Judge, I have a small issue before the next witness. Can we take that up now?
Quickly, yes.
Yes. So the next witness after you're done will be Miss Alicia Alcide, who's a nurse who was involved somewhat in the taking of the pictures on January 6th. At her deposition, counsel for plaintiffs spent a good bit of time addressing why wasn't she discovered earlier, did risk management look for her, and I'm, I guess, moving in limine or tennis set that not be an issue. It's not an issue for this jury. It was a discovery issue for us and for the court, but would request that that not be an issue, that be put in front of this jury.
Okay, so I'm sorry, you want me to preclude what precisely?
Questions regarding why wasn't she identified to the plaintiff a year ago? Did risk management come looking for her? Did they send emails? Did they try to find the nurse who was in the photos? Did they? All of those questions that have nothing to do with the issues in front of this jury.
Well, there is certainly something very curious in this case. If since her hands are in photographs, and these were seminal to the plaintiff's case for 5 years, I think some questions about was she aware that her involvement in this case was sought, and if so, why didn't she speak up? I don't want to get into the issues of who, if she says, no, I had no idea, then I guess it's over. But if she says, yes, I did know about it, and that just nobody ever asked me, then I think that is an admissible fact for the jury.
It doesn't go to any issue for this jury to decide, Judge.
There's a bias.
It seems that really what you're trying to do is create a spoliation-esque type of argument, which isn't an issue for the jury. There's been no finding by the court of spoliation, so I don't think we need to do that. I'll try something here.
So you're sustaining the request or the objection?
Yeah, I'm going to prohibit that line of questioning.
Thank you.
I will grant the oral tennis motion. Tennis motion.
I'm not sure of the timing, but again, the defense made any headway on the reports of 2017 reports of employees.
Can we address that after this next witness?
We said at lunch.
Well, whatever. I just know the jury's waiting and the witnesses are.
Did they have one?
It's a yes or no, isn't it?
Does Your Honor want to address that now?
I'm sorry, I didn't focus on what Mr. Anderson said.
They would like to address the 2017 further inquiry as to the performance evaluations. Do you want to do that now, or would you like to do it at the next break?
What's the answer?
Okay.
Yeah. The answer is we do have a subsequent performance review there that spans a time from 2017 through 2018. It's the next performance review. Whether that date backs all the way to October, I can't necessarily tell. It doesn't appear to be that way, but they're welcome to it. I'm happy to produce it.
We'll send it over.
Okay.
That's skirting the issue. We don't have a performance review from the hospital for the time span of this corrective action as Ms. Beattie from the end of October through July of 2017. It's not there.
Do you want to take a deposition on the issue? Because I'm going to need facts if you're asking me to do anything. I can't just accept representations from lawyers because you know that's the case law says that that's not evidence and it's not the same as sworn evidence.
And the answer is yes.
And I think they should be required to produce.
I said that they had somebody had to have somebody on warm standby. Yeah. So why don't you get the documents over, you know, and are you able to do it in the next few minutes?
Yep.
Send that over, and then perhaps during one of the depositions that is being played, you can look at it, and then we can talk about when the deposition that you want to take will occur.
Our biggest concern is exactly what the court pointed out, which is, were there reviews of other employees at the same time? And so I don't know if they're going to redact or how they plan to do it, but we would like to see some proof of that.
The person from All Children's is going to have to be able to testify as to what happened with everyone else at the time and the salary issues and
why there isn't one. I don't understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'm going to take this down until I'm ready to leave. Anything else before we bring in the jury?
Not to the defense.
We'd like to know two things, witnesses for tomorrow, and I think we were told we would get an answer on Fabre.
Witnesses for tomorrow are Dr. Jennifer McCain.
Who is it?
Dr. Jennifer McCain. I think he's a pharmacist, James Schott. Jason Banker is our billing person. And we're hoping to play the video depositions of Dr. Hannah and Dr. O'Leary at a minimum.
Concerned about the pharmacist Schott. You're talking about the pharmacist from CVS, Schott?
Quorum.
Well, Quorum. Same thing.
Well, we can talk about that after the jury leaves for the day. Anything else? Let's bring in the jury.
Yes, sir.
More live courtroom coverage of the Take Care of Maya trial from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today is coming up. Press subscribe now.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
What's up, Boos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.